I hate exams, folks. I really do, but, you know, what are you going to do? Let's get started. It's the 12th of February, and we're starting fast. The assignments are for, assignment is due. If you need it, a mute annual report, I have extras. Turn in your assignments, even if they're late. We're going to start stocks. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? Yeah, all right. Can't create a hostile environment.
No.
Okay, let's hear. How do you create a hostile environment? You say something sexy or nasty or racist or whatever.
Oh, no.
Okay, Eduardo?
I'll be there.
He's sleeping. Okay.
Why does a chicken wear pants?
Why don't chickens wear pants? Because they got sexy legs? I don't know why. That's what I mean. You can't create a problem. You can't. No, not all of us. That would be a rooster. It would be a rooster, right? It's a chicken. That's the... Well, forget it. Oh, boy. All right. So, introduction to stocks. Everybody got one? Got some extras? Okay. Okay. Now, notice that we're going to spend a lot of time on stocks. There is much to learn, folks. There is much to learn. Every day, you need... I hope that some of you are going to take the Series 7, and when you take the Series 7, you're going to go, ooh-hoo-hoo, they want us to know all this stuff? And the answer is, yes, they do. They want you to know all of this stuff. So, here's Anna Guerreros. Let me see. Serbia's, no? I don't have it. Okay, I'll find it. Everybody look through your exams and make sure I didn't put a second, another somebody else's exam. Where's Anna? Where'd you go?
$5.
What?
$5.
Oof. Okay. We start with a great quote from a humorist from the early part of the 20th century. Don't gamble! Take all your savings and buy some good stock and hold it till it goes up. And if it don't go up, don't buy it. Isn't that a good advice?
No.
No? If it don't go up, don't buy it?
It's a joke.
And after this crash in 1929, there was an entire generation and a half that stayed away from stocks for almost 40 years until the 1960s, after the stock market had done really well in the 50s and 60s. So he wasn't the only one who was burnt. The stock market, Chapter 5 goes in too much detail about initial public offerings. We're going to spend this much time on them. Buying and selling securities, Chapter 2 goes into too much detail about buying and selling securities. We're going to spend this much time on it. But the bulk of it will be introduction to stocks from lecture notes. And what this mostly is, folks, is the fundamental information you need to pass the Series 7 for on stocks. So that's what I'm doing. Where did the term common stocks come from? What are they? Well, the term came from the idea that the shareholders are in common. They're shareholders in common. Every share has one voting right. Normally, that's how it works. Every share you own is able to make one vote about what's going to happen with the corporation, and you get one, whatever they declare for dividends, you get a piece of that. Stocks represent what?
Ownership.
Do we want to be owners of businesses?
Yes.
Stocks are equity, so you're going to hear people use the term equity when they talk about stocks. They enable investors to participate in the profits and the growth generated by the business enterprise, but unlike sole proprietorships, unlike partnerships, you are a limited liability owner. If the corporation goes bankrupt and there are still debts that they owe, can they come after you, stockholder? No, they can't. You're limited to how much money you have invested. Now, there are situations where some people will set up a sham corporation as a way to hide behind what is called the corporate veil. Have you taken Business 120, some of you?
Yes.
Introduction to Business?
Yes.
You discussed this quite a bit. And those are not the kind of investments that we're looking at. We're looking at bona fide real companies. So don't worry about that. What do stockholders receive? Everybody should say?
Dividends.
Dividends and?
Yep.
Are either of these guaranteed?
No.
No. So what do we say about stocks? We use the word
volatile.
What does it mean when a stock is volatile?
Yeah.
It means you bought it for $12 and sold it for 30 cents. Yeah. Contrary to what many... You know anybody who's done that?
Yeah.
I did that one. Just once. Contrary to what many believe and how many behave, stocks are not simply millions upon millions of worthless pieces of paper. Well, they're not even pieces of paper anymore, so electronic, that people trade each day for no apparent reason. No, they represent ownership in real companies, real businesses. And how have they done? Well, actually pretty darn well. If we look over the long term, the return from the stock market as measured by the Standard & Poor's 500, 500 largest companies in the United States, which we'll discuss on Thursday, or maybe next Tuesday, has averaged around 10 or 11% annually for the last 80 years. But do you get 10, 11% every year? No, it's very rare, actually. It is unlikely that the return in any one year will be 10 or 11%. The return has varied from a high of almost 54%, that was 1950s, to a low of minus 43.4, and that's 10,008. Yeah. And in any given year, there has been a 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 chance of a down market. So, does it work out that 1, 2, 3 up and it's down? 1, 2, 3 up and it's down? No, it doesn't work that way, folks. It doesn't work that way. And in fact, there was a major exception. From 1982 to 2000, the stock market never went down. I mean, it did go down, but year to year, and you took the exam, right? You are, your name again is? Victor Maldonado. Yeah, good. Okay. This, even though it crashed in 87, at the end of the year, it was actually ticked up just a little bit. It was a wild ride. And so here we see a graph that we saw back in Chapter 1. Do you remember this graph? It shows you the relative returns from, again, ignoring small company stocks, large company stocks, the S&P 500, Standard & Poor's 500, 500 largest companies in the United States, long-term government bonds, treasury bills, and inflation. And it shows you, once again, opportunity costs. If you played it safe and kept your money in the bank or kept your money in treasury bills or other short-term investments over the last 80-some-odd years, you beat inflation, but not by much. Bonds beat inflation. You took a little bit more risk, not much. They're long-term government bonds. But how did stocks do for you?
Yeah.
But this is a logarithmic scale, which means every increment is a power of 10. That's the way people don't understand the logarithmic scales. Do you understand logarithmic scales? When they say, oh, it was a 7.4 earthquake or a 4.8 earthquake. Do you understand what it means? No, people don't. They live through a 4.3 and they go, well, that wasn't too bad. I guess an 8 is just twice as bad, right?
Nah.
It's 10 to the 4th power. 10,000 times more powerful. So these little bumps that look like little bumps ain't little bumps because the numbers get huge. And this is a graph we haven't looked at yet, but I hope it shows you promise for the future. Because here we are, these are the rolling 10-year periods. 10 years, from 1928 to 1937, 1929, 1938. This is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is 30 large company stocks, which we'll discuss later. And we see that we had negative returns in the Great Depression. And we're coming out of World War II, the Korean War, and the 50s and 60s go-go years, which many of you weren't around for, but some of us were. And then, oh boy, up and way up. Whoopee-doo! We're going to get rich, rich, rich! You see, this whole time, people were afraid of stocks. They were terrified. Their grandpappy, their father, lost everything in the Great Depression, and so they wouldn't touch them. Until 1968, when stocks had done really well after World War II, only to watch 1970s hit. What happened in 1970s? Vietnam, Watergate, disco. That was a real tough part on our psyche. No. What happened is the baby boom generation. After the World War II, it was your patriotic duty to go out and have as many kids as you could. What? Yes, they did. You got to talk to a boomer. I'm asking how many people are in their family. 4, 5, 6 was typical. Some people had more. If you only had 1 or 2 kids in your family, there was something suspicious about you. Probably un-American. Probably communist sympathizers. Right, you understand? Now what do we say when we see somebody with 4, 5, 6 kids? We know what causes that now. We know what causes it. We can just snip, snip, it's all over. Okay, so the 70s were a very difficult time for the economy. And people swore off stocks, only to see the 1980s and 90s roar with the internet, with computers, with globalization, and then we're all going to get rich, and then what happened? You have to go back to the Great Depression to see the first 10-year periods where we lost money over 10 years. But last couple of 10-year periods have been positive. Is this a guarantee for the future?
No.
Everyone should say no. Wait till I ask you. Is this a guarantee for the future?
No.
In fact, the better response is hell no. Right? Hell no. But is it a good sign?
I think so.
Doesn't mean I'm right. Doesn't mean I'm right. But I think it is, as a matter of fact. So I'm pretty positive. Where'd he go? There he is. Okay. I'm pretty positive. Now, do I think it's going to do this again? Personally, I don't think so, but that doesn't mean I'm right. It doesn't mean it's not going to go down a whole bunch. But I'm pretty positive. And why is that? I'll tell you why. I'll tell you again some other time. But millions, hundreds of millions of people, folks, around the world. You know, we don't see this because we live in developed countries and world's largest economy. We're 4% of the world's population and we use 20-some percent of the world's resources. But hundreds of millions of people around the world in the developing countries, we used to say third world, don't say that anymore, in the developing economies are coming out of poverty. And that is phenomenal for economies. Phenomenal for economies. Phenomenal for companies. And not just the companies in those economies. In fact, it's better for the companies in the developing world. Why? Because the benefit goes first to the worker. The worker has more money in their pocket. And we're not just talking about China and India. We're talking about Mexico too, folks. I know we compare Mexico to the United States, and it's the 1/4 the size in terms of per capita, but still, they have approached, if they haven't beaten, $10,000 per person per capita. That is a huge number compared to the rest of the world. And Peru is doing well, and Brazil and Argentina are doing well. Latin America is doing really well. Eastern Europe. Africa is starting to pick and get into the act, if you can believe that. And then, of course, the subcontinent, India, the Southeast Asia, Russia, these developing economies, when these workers have more money in their pocket, what do they want? Spend it on what? McDonald's! They want McDonald's, they want Coca-Cola, they want Pampers. They want the things that we take for granted. They want toothpaste. What? Cell phones. Cell phones. They want cell phones. They'd go, forget landlines. I'm sorry. Electronics. They want electronics. They want Danone yogurt. They want Marlboro cigarettes. Because they love the Marlboro, man. Cowboys. I wish you guys don't remember the commercials, but they used to have the guy riding on the horse and say, "This is Marlboro Country." I wish he would ride into a cemetery and say, "This is Marlboro Country." No, it doesn't work that way. And so, I don't know if we're going to have this kind of thing happen, but we should have, the next 20 years or so, folks, should be enough, providing we don't blow ourselves up. which is always an issue. Okay. Traditionally, close to half of the return from stocks was from reinvested dividends. We talked about reinvested dividends in mutual funds. Well, the same thing can be true for stocks. Reinvesting your dividends into stocks. Stockholders used to expect 4 to 6% in dividends each year. That was as much or more than bonds returned in interest, since stocks were considered much riskier than bonds. The Standard & Poor's 500 dividend average, the 500 largest companies in the United States, average dividend from 36 to 2008 was almost 4%. Now, some companies don't pay dividends. They're growth companies. But companies that pay dividends, the average was 3.8. But in the 1990s, 1980s, dividends fell. Why? People wanted those dividends reinvested into the company to grow the business. They didn't want, don't pay me dividends. I want capital gains. So the average from 1997 to 2007 was only 1.5. In fact, we touched 1% in March of 2000 at the height of the stock market bubble. And people would say, well, dividends are tax higher, so I want capital gains. I want you to reinvest the earnings. I want you not to distribute to me. I want you to plow it back into the company and grow the company. And people said, well, stocks are no longer considered riskier than bonds. I don't know who said that. A few people did. In the short term, stocks are much riskier than bonds. Over the long term, if you have a long term time horizon, you can make the argument that they're not as risky because of you're going to beat inflation unless the world ends. But in the short term, standard deviation, what do we know about stocks? More risky. What do you know about stocks versus bonds?
They're more risky.
Savings accounts also fell from 5% down to now less than 1%. And we could also say that people lost track of their senses and bid up their prices, and that was true for some companies in the late 90s. So let's take a look at the yield on bonds, specifically the 10-year treasury, versus the yield on stocks. And we go back to 1960 and we see that they were pretty close. The yield on stocks was, on average, S&P 500, up close to 4%. And the yield on bonds, 10-year treasury bond, was a little over 4%. And then in the 1970s, they started to diverge. Why? Stocks didn't do so well. And inflation started to kick in. So bond investors expected higher yields. And then in the early 1980s, actually started in 79, the Federal Reserve Bank, under the direction of Paul Volcker, look him up, he's still around, he's working for Obama, if you can believe it, he's a Republican, he said we're going to break the back of inflation and we're going to jack up interest rates. And the interest rates skyrocketed. The Treasury bonds hit 15% there for just a moment. The mortgages, most of you weren't alive, but mortgages hit 17%. Anybody remember that? 1981, 1982? Just for a few months. 17%. What are they now, mortgage rates?
3.5,
yeah. Yeah, so, and then we see the interest rates coming down, stock yields spiked at 5%, over 5%, and then in the 1980s and 1990s, we see both falling. There's the height of the stock market bubble, March of 2000, and then bond yields still falling, and then look what happened. In 2008, with the turmoil, prices on stocks plummeted, so the yield went up. At the same time, people got so spooked that they sold everything and bought treasury bonds. And so the yield on treasury bonds went below the yield on stocks. This is usually a very good sign for stocks. And since 2008, 2009, the stock market has doubled. Of course, it went in half, more than half. And then we had the bond yield go above, the stock yield went down. And now again, right here, we're at the same location. This has always been, it's not a guarantee. This has always been a very good sign for stocks. When the yield on stocks is higher than the yield on bonds. Other people would say, no, we're just ready for the whole thing to fall apart. Right? They've been bandaging the system since the turmoil of 2008-09, and we're just ready for the whole thing to fall apart. Everything's going to become worthless. The dollar's going to become worthless. Buy gold. Gold is going to go to $5,000 an ounce, $10,000 an ounce. Buy shotguns, buy real estate, buy canned foods. Yeah, or exactly. Or just, if you really believe that, folks, my advice would be to get out of the Northern Hemisphere. Learn how to raise goats, sorghum, wheat, all kinds of stuff, soybean. The pendulum swings, folks. The pendulum swings. The bear markets of 2000 to 2002 and 2008 have changed investors' perception about dividends. We now see investors and companies focusing more and more attention on dividends. In fact, there's a bit of a brouhaha now. There's a very famous investor who's literally suing Apple because they're not paying higher dividends. That Apple's sitting on $140 billion in cash. So he's suing them, saying you have to... No, he can't. He has no case. There's no... Yes?
Dell went private.
Dell may go private.
What
that's the plan. Well, right now it's a publicly traded company, which means you and I and investors around the world can buy shares in Dell. And a group of investors, Microsoft's included in this, are setting up what is called a buyout, a taking the company private. They're going to raise a bunch of capital and buy all the shares on the stock market, take it private, and it'll become a private institution, a private company. They will be given a chance to sell it before the tender offer. It's called a tender offer. They can sell their shares now, but if they wait until the tender offer, wait until the offer is accepted by 50% plus one, more than 50% of the shareholders, then the stock will be taken away from them and they'll get the cash. So I have no choice. Because once you own 50% plus one of the shares, you can take the company private. You can say, okay, I'm going to buy all the shares. Because all you can do is vote and say, we're going to go private. And you win. Make sense? Because every one share gets one vote. So we're going to talk about that. Let's talk about it right now real quick. If a company on the exchange is a takeover target or some group of investors, often, in this case, it's people from within the company, right? Michael Dell, he's the CEO, he's the guy who started in his dorm room back in the 1980s. He had to talk to his buddies and say, hey, would you let me hide all the computers I'm building and selling in your dorm room when my parents come because they think I'm going to school? So he had to hide because his parents didn't know that he was at school, he was in the dorm room, so he wasn't going to classes. He was selling computers, just before the internet. He was selling them 800 numbers in his dorm room. And Dell Computer, he's now worth billions. So he and a group of other investors, Microsoft being one of them, are going to come up with a certain amount of money. And what happens is when this happens, they have to go to the exchange. They have to go, in this case, the NASDAQ. And they say, look, we're interested in buying the shares, buying the company, taking it private. They then set up a date when they will announce this to the world. Because as soon as they announce it to the world, they have to give a premium. Say the stock is selling for $12. They say, we'll take it private at $14. Because if they try to start buying up all the shares, the stock price would start going like this. What's going on? Somebody's always buying the shares. So they set up an orderly way of taking the company private. And they say, we'll give you $14 a share. If the investors around the world believe that it's a bona fide, meaning a real offer, then the price will immediately spike to $14, or pretty darn close. If they don't think it's a real offer, forget it. It's not going to happen. Or they might bid above that price, saying that, ooh, somebody else might come in and offer $15. There might be a bidding war. You understand? Yeah, so watch that. We'll watch that. Watch that, though. So, dividends don't lie. More and more companies now... And many companies that never paid dividends, tech companies that were up to their ears in cash, like Microsoft and Apple, they are now mature industries. They are now starting to pay dividends. And the tax law has changed so that dividends are taxed the same as capital gains. This is something that Bush was one of the things that Bush got done. And finally, Obama and the Democrats have agreed to it. They kept, when they originally created it in 2003, it was just temporary. We're going to tax dividends the same as capital gains. And Democrats were like, all right, we'll do it. There's a war going on. And then they said, well, we're going to make it temporary. And then they kept, in 2008, they upped it to 2010. In 2010, they upped it to 2012. And at the end of last year, they made it permanent. Dividend, well, it's either 5, 15, or 20%. It used to be taxed at your marginal tax rate. It used to be taxed as income, but not anymore. This is a cute quote. It's attributed to him. We don't know if it's really true or not. Look it up. But I love it. Do you know the only thing that gives me pleasure is to see my dividends coming in? John D. Rockefeller. John David Rockefeller. You don't like that? Supposedly said it to his neighbor when he was picking up the mail. Said to his wife. Now, what are the pros and cons of stock ownership? Well, the pros, they allow general public to share in the rewards of the business enterprise. They're the best investment, we should say, I keep meaning to put the word financial in there. Then in financial investment, because then the real estate investors go, what are you talking about? Real estate's beating stocks. And there's an argument about, we could discuss this a long time. But we should say best financial investment return over time. Dividends and capital gains, easy to buy and sell, very liquid. Assuming it's a real company, 100 shares of Nestle, 100 shares of McDonald's, limited liability, and one thing that we as investors don't normally think about, but this system has increased the standard of living for everybody. Some people will say, capitalism is awful, capitalism is terrible, and I will agree. It is probably the worst system for distributing goods and services to an economy, to a country, to a people, to a society. Except for all the others. How's that sugar cane working out for you, Mr. Castro?
Oh, not so well.
Were you going to sell it now? The Soviet Union is not communist anymore. So we've tried other systems and they haven't worked. When something better comes along, I'll be sure to check it out. But so far, this is it. Okay. And the cool thing is the rest of the world is going, you know, you're right, guys. You guys in the West, you're right. We're going to do that too. What are the cons? Everyone should say? Which is another way of saying volatile, which is the popular euphemism. You know what euphemism means? Euphemism? Yeah, exactly. Boy, good girls, let's go powder our nose. Yeah, it's better than saying, why do women go to the bathroom together? I never figured that one out. What? Security? Is that what it is?
Protection.
Guys don't go to the bathroom together. No. Like, you go in there, you just get out. You know, you don't go to the bathroom. And then, what goes on? Hanky-panky, travesura, trucos, shenanigans. Because that's where the money is, folks. They asked the one very famous bank robber, why do you rob banks?
That's where the money is.
Yes.
Do you think that every company should, once they get big, offer an IPO? Or do you think it's just
Well, again, we're going to discuss that in just a few slides. It's up to the company. It's up to the company. Why go public? It's just expected. Once a company gets large enough, they are welcomed into the investment community, and they make it really enticing for them to do so. Is that somebody else's? Oh, it says the spreadsheet. Who hasn't seen the spreadsheet yet? Okay, so pass it up this way. Okay. Well, I'll get to that in a few slides. Now, volatility. Here's 2012, the Standard & Poor's 500. 2012 was a very good year, folks, by all standards. It was a very good year, above 10%. That's always good if it's above 10%. But you started off the year, and it was gangbusters, and you said, well, maybe it looks like it's going to do well. Okay, it's March. Maybe I'll put some money in. And then what happened? And so you took all the money out, right, because you don't want to lose. So then you watch it go up again, and oh, boy, look at September and October. And then but then it actually did pretty well. So you understand? If you try to time the market that way, all I can say is good luck, because I don't know anybody who's ever done it. I've known people who've tried to do it, and all they will tell you is, oh boy, you know. And it just, you know, it doesn't work. Well, it depends. It depends. Do you have a long-term time horizon? Right? Because if you need this money in 3 months, you understand? You don't know if it's going to do this or it's going to do that. All the studies have shown that in the short term, the market is completely unpredictable. It is random in the short term. In the long term, it's done pretty darn well. Yes, Nicholas, you have a question?
Yes. As an investor, when you're investing, like let's say you put in like $10,000, do you recommend that you keep that for the longest amount of time that you can before you start selling it off? Or should you be like if you're more like a, you just want to be in trading? Like, you're a trader, you know how they're buying and selling. What would you recommend? Is this just the style of the investor?
You know, we talked about it in chapter 1, we talked about it a little bit in chapter 4, we're going to talk about it again. If you really want to get in there and joust and buy and sell and buy and sell, I wish you the best of luck, and I will do my best to dissuade you from doing it. And it's not even my money. Why should I care? That's the thing. I have a friend who did that, and I tried my best to stop him to do it.
So you think it's better to just...
If you don't need the money anytime soon, if this is money you're not going to touch for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, yes, put in the stock market, maybe look at real estate if you're so inclined, but I believe the stock market is the place to be for the long term. Remembering that it's going to do this. There's going to be these times. There's going to be another 2008.
You've got to hold on. Man.
You got to hold on. But if you need the money in 6 months because you're going to buy a house or you need it for school, don't put your financial aid money for the year in the stock market. Okay? If you have a short-term investment, short-term time horizon, where do you need to put the money?
Money market.
Money market. CD. Bank. You know, you got it. Credit union.
Let's say there's like another crisis, and you keep all your shares debt. Do they raise up in value when everyone's pulling at it?
No. They're going to go down. If the world comes back, and we're all well-fed, well-clothed, well-sheltered, well-biked, well-carred, well-computered, yeah, if this system survives... That's why dollar cost averaging is so cool. That's why putting $50 a month, $100 a month is so cool. Because when the market tanks, you're keeping on buying. You understand? You take the emotion out of investing. You don't say it's a good time to invest, it's a bad time to invest. Every month is a good time to invest, providing you have a long-term time horizon. If you have a short-term time horizon, it better not be in the stock market, because you could lose 20% in one day. We're going to see a day when it did. We're going to see a little video when the stock market lost 22.6%, almost 23% in one day. But there'll be a video. Yeah, believe it or not, I do sometimes show you guys videos. Sometimes, not all of you. You see enough videos. Yes, I'm sorry. What? This is the Standard & Poor's 500 last year, 2012. Well, there are index funds which invest in the 500 companies that are in the Standard & Poor's 500. But the Standard & Poor's 500, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, we're going to get to it on Thursday or maybe next Tuesday, is simply a list of the five, traditionally, the 500 largest companies in the United States. It's just a list made by a company called Standard & Poor's. Have you heard of S&P Standard & Poor's?
Yeah.
They're part of the same company that made your textbook, McGraw-Hill. Have you heard of McGraw-Hill? Very big media company. They own radio stations, television stations. They make books. They make magazines. And they're in the media. And they own Standard & Poor's. And Standard & Poor's investigates companies. They produce research reports. And they rate companies for their credit. They rate municipalities. They rate the United States government. And they said that the United States government is no longer AAA. They are now AA+. Yeah. That's a long story. So when we talk about the Standard & Poor's 500, we're talking about 500 companies, the 500 largest companies in the United States.
So if you wanted to invest in that, you'd have to invest in all 500?
Or buy the index. Buy the Vanguard, buy the Fidelity, or buy the Spider. Remember the Spider? We'll just talk about the Spider. That's the ETF. That's the ETF that tracks the Standard & Poor's 500. Those people who run those index funds, they look at the list of the 500 companies on the S&P 500, and they buy the companies in the proportion of which they are in the index. If they're not on the list, they don't buy them. So you or I could run that fund. What a sweet deal, huh? Wouldn't it be great? We'd be making bank. All right, so now let's discuss a little bit of time. You ready? Everybody, come on. Wake up. Yawn, wake up, stretch. Because we're ready to discuss primary versus secondary markets. The primary markets, folks, get a lot of attention. Our book spends too much time on them. But for you and me, these things are not something normally you'd want to get involved in. My advice is stay out of the primary market. And you don't hear the term primary market. What you hear is IPO, which stands for, everyone should say, initial public offering. No, actually it stands for it's probably overpriced. Or imaginary profits only, okay? Because these companies tend to be very dangerous, folks. Stay away from them. I'm telling you, most retail investors do not participate in the primary market. My recommendation is that we shouldn't, unless you got some serious money to lose. Yes?
Their value is so high, it goes down.
Because IPO stands for it's probably overpriced.
But it's
very important to start out.
It means getting a lot of money to start out.
And then once it's growing, then rates
go down. Have
you heard of Facebook? I'm sorry, what's it called?
Facebook.
I forget what it's called. What's it called? Oh, yeah. Arm book. Anyway, we're going to see, wait till we get to valuations, we're going to see that Facebook is outrageously priced. Outrageously priced. Now, overpriced is a judgment call. Others might say, oh, no, it deserves that valuation because there are hundreds of millions of people who, before they do anything else, they run to their Facebook page to see who's going to take the bathroom or something like that. I don't know. What do you guys do with Facebook is what I want to know. I have one student. Everybody go to the bathroom at the same time. Okay, we're all ready. Let's go to the bathroom at the same time. Flash mob, right? So it's called going public, taking the company public. The secondary market is where you and I should be involved, and that is the stock market. That's the place that securities are traded after they have been issued to the public, and the vast majority of transactions take place in the secondary market. So let's spend a little bit of time on this, folks. Why go public? Why do corporations issue common stock? Well, as Victor said, they need some money. We got a great idea. We need to start a business or expand an existing business. If it's an ongoing, if it's already public and they need more cash, this is the way biotechs here in San Diego live and die. They need tons of cash. So they get a $200 million offering, and then they burn through that, and they go back to the stock market and say, we're not done yet. We're going to do it. So give us another $100 million. And often it happens, and then sometimes the markets just say, forget it. We're not going to give you any more money, and then the company disappears. As a way to gain prestige and respect within the investment and industrial communities. As somebody said, I forget who it was, once a company gets large enough, it is just expected for them to go public. It is just expected. Why? Well, they're going to make it worth their while. It is a tremendous reward for those who started the business. Think about Google, folks. Google in the early 2000s was making money hand over fist. And the people who started it were not quite sure that they wanted to go public. The investment community came to them and said, this is what we think it's worth. You'll become an instant multi-billionaire wouldn't it be nice for you to go public? And they kind of said, yeah, not a bad idea. Right? And so is that what you want to do? Do you want to start a new company that's going to make the next big thing and work 18 hours a day for 7 years and then take it public and become an instant multimillionaire, maybe a billionaire? Well, for everyone Google, does anybody remember Lycos? Or AltaVista, or Ask, or Ask Jeeves, or Dogpile.
Yeah, that one too.
That one? Dogpile. What a great name. For everyone's Facebook? My face, my Facebook? Que pasa? Have you seen Que pasa? That's for the Latin world.
High five.
Did you have a question?
Oh, no, I was going to say Google is a catchy name. That's fine.
It's a great name. And what you wouldn't do, folks, you're a business person, you get down on your knees and you say, please, God, let my name of my company be part of the language. Xerox, Kleenex, Band-Aid, Google. I mean, think about that. It's now part of the language. When you look something up on the internet, what do? Do you search for, you use your favorite search engine? You Google it. And Microsoft spent millions of dollars coming up with a name to fight it. Do you Bing it? That's the one thing. Microsoft has no class whatsoever. No class whatsoever. So, it ain't easy, folks. For everyone, you know, company that makes it, there are dozens that don't. And also, simply because once a business becomes sufficiently large, it becomes very difficult for the owners to divvy up the spoils without going public. How would you sell your share of a business that's worth $4 billion? You got to find somebody who's got $4 billion, right, to buy it from. So if you break it up into little bitty pieces, it's easy then to trade the company. If you were one of the people who started GE or Coca-Cola or Walmart, how would you sell your shares of the business? So what are some examples of the largest private companies? You've heard of these.
Oh,
In-N-Out Burger. And in fact,
Walmart.
No, Walmart's public. Walmart's not private. HEB. HEB, which you never heard of because it's in the South and in the East, but it's a very large grocery chain, like Bonds, like Safeway. Bonds is actually Safeway. HEB is one of the largest private companies in the country. In-N-Out Burger is a tremendous example of what goes wrong, what can go wrong if you keep a company private. I don't know what's happened lately, but the family started having an internal feud about how they were going to take the business. What were they going to do with the business after the couple? What? After the couple who started it died, there was an internal feud about how they should continue. Because In-N-Out Burger is the only one I know that uses, don't even use this word, but fresh meat. They don't freeze their burgers. They don't freeze the meat.
They have one owner only, the daughter.
Did that what happen? I haven't followed it. I haven't found it. They have one owner now. Okay. The daughter took it over? Okay, because there was an internal feud that maybe it's been resolved. Have you ever heard of Snickers or M&M's? Mars. You can buy shares in Hershey, folks. You can buy shares in, well, now it's called Mondelez, Kraft, and Oreo cookies. But you can't buy shares in M&M's, in Mars.
They're private.
They're privately owned by a family.
So, okay, so what can go wrong? There's a few. What else?
What can go wrong is the family can start internecine. They can start fighting, feuding.
Yeah.
It's a private company.
Like the mom and dad
in and out died, and now there was a fight over how to take the what to do with the company.
The son, the daughter, the banks, they were trying to fight over it, and there was either where someone trying to kick out one of the brothers out, so the daughter could take over.
And looks like they were successful. Yeah. Or maybe they bought them out. They just said, here, go
home. You're
hungry.
You're hungry? What?
What else is negative about being private?
Well, you don't, it's hard to divvy up the spoils. Once, you know, what do you do? How do you handle it? A lot of big private companies are actually partnerships, and in like law firms and doctor groups and accounting firms. And then the partners own the business. So in that way, it's like a little internal corporation. There are partners that work together. It's a group. I'm sorry?
No, there's like a working partner.
There might be a CEO, there might be a chief executive officer that makes decisions, but the partners can always kick them out if they don't do what the partners want. No, Jobs was the CEO of Apple. He's talking about the 1980s. And what they did is they brought this guy in from Pepsi Cola or something like that, I forget his name, and he forced Jobs out. This was in the late 80s. He forced Jobs out. He said, well, Jobs is an entrepreneur. We need somebody to run the business. And then Apple almost disappeared in the late 90s, and they brought Jobs back, and the rest is history. So he was still a public company, though. It was still a public company, but this guy forced them out through the board of directors. Okay, the corporation does not have to repay the money. It is under no obligation to repurchase the shares of the stock. The shareholder may or may not be able to find someone who will purchase the shares from them. But if it's a bona fide, meaning a real company with real profits that makes a real product or service, you will be able to find somebody to buy your shares. But on the corporate side, they are now a public entity. And as such, they have many rights and responsibilities that private companies don't have to worry about. If you went to In-N-Out Burger, if you went to Mars and said, what did you make last year? They'll go, who are you? Are you the IRS? We don't have to tell it to you. But if you're a public company, every quarter you have to file forms. Every year you have to file a 10-K. How's this? How do you say this?
10-K.
Say it again.
10-K.
And every quarter you have to file a...
10-Q.
What was that?
10-Q.
You're welcome.
Wow.
You're welcome. Thank you. I live for that joke. Okay, with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And they are globally available on the Internet. Anybody can read everything you said about your company. About how much money you made, how much cash you have on hand, what are your risks, what are your opportunities, what could go wrong, what could go right. And every year they have to have at least one public meeting. Here's a little story about SDG&E, Sempra it's called, it's the parent company. They're based here in San Diego, and they have their annual meeting here every year. And in the late 90s, early 2000s, they made some boneheaded maneuvers, and shareholders would come and jump and scream and holler at them. They had to sit through it every year, so they would say, okay, they said, okay, we'll fix your little red wagon. They held the annual meeting in London. Chapter 5 goes into much detail about initial public offerings. But folks, for you and I, for you and me, stay away from them. IPOs do not usually live up to their expectation. The average typical IPO loses approximately 50% of its value in 1 year. Now, there are notable exceptions. Google was one of them. MasterCard, when it went public, did phenomenally. Visa did okay. But there are notable, I forget who they're owned by. But Facebook is an excellent example. It went public at 38 back in May, went down to 20, and now it's back up to some 32 or something like that. We'll follow it later on. Now, you ready to just get started on the secondary market? So any questions last on going public? That is all everything that they talk about in the book, about the underwriters and all that other stuff. Ignore it. You don't need to know it. If you read Chapter 5, you will have to know that if you take the Series 7. You will have to understand about the cooling off period and all that other ridiculous stuff that no broker I know actually deals with. Because you need people who have got a lot of money to lose if you're going to start dealing with the IPOs. Because they usually do lose money. Now, that doesn't mean one of them might explode on the upside and become the next Google. But for the most part, what does IPO stand for? It's probably overpriced. Very good. Now, what are the markets? What are the secondary markets? These are also called, you'll hear an old-timer term, call it the aftermarket. That's another name for it. In which securities are sold after they've been issued. Secondary markets provide liquidity, an easy method for transferring ownership of securities, and a wonderful efficient mechanism for pricing and valuing the securities. So you have 100 shares of IBM. What are they worth? Oh, go look at what the market price is now. You understand? So you know what the company is worth. It changes all the time. And when people talk about the stock market, they are almost always referring to the secondary market, unless they talk about, they say, primary IPO market. So now, traditionally, there were two types of secondary markets. There were the exchanges, organized, centralized exchanges, securities exchanges, and there was the... I'm sorry? Well, hang on a minute. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves. The biggest one of these is the New York Stock Exchange. But the NASDAQ is over here, but they will yell at you and scream at you, don't use the word OTC. We don't want to hear it. We're the NASDAQ. They don't want you to use the term OTC. What? Yeah. These are the organized securities exchanges were the places that you don't even see it anymore. You saw the people screaming and hollering at one another, right? And you say, what is this chaos? Well, they're conducting business. And they are. It's like a swap meet. But it's a little weird. It's like an auction. You go to an auction, you're used to seeing the one guy or gal up in the front calling out prices, and people out in the audience or whatever saying, yeah, I'll pay that, yeah, I'll pay that. But it's very different. There are multiple buyers, and there are multiple sellers. Everybody is screaming, I will buy, I'm not yelling, I will buy 100 shares at 25, or I will sell 100 shares at 25. Are you with me? But somebody else saying, I'll buy 200 shares at 25 and an eighth. But they don't say that. What they would say, they don't say anymore, it's all electronic, but they would say, 25! 25! And what do they mean? I will buy 100 shares. I'm calling them out. I'm calling you. Calling the shares in at $25 a share. I will buy 100 shares. If they said 2 at 25, they meant 200 shares at $25 a share. Do you understand?
You would have to buy 100?
No, you didn't have to buy 100 shares. But if you wanted to buy an odd lot, and we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, because we'll discuss this in detail throughout the next couple weeks. And this stuff you got to know, even though a lot of it is outdated, so it's all going away. You would have to say 17 shares at 25. You would have to say 17 shares at 25. If you said 17 at 25, you meant 1,700 shares. But if you said 17 shares at 25, that would be an odd lot. That would mean you're just buying and selling 17 shares. Are you with me?
That's the guy that's on the phone.
On the phone, yelling and screaming, waving things. He's talking to people who are in the office who are bringing in orders. Oh, his customer in Kansas City wants to sell 100 shares to McDonald's. Okay, 127. 120, no, not 127. 27. That meant I want to sell 100 shares at 27. You say 27. Are you with me?
So he's calling like the McDonald's phone?
No, he's calling the shareholder in Kansas City. The shareholder in Kansas City has put in an order to sell, to buy. Did I say buy?
No.
Sell. He put in an order to sell 100 of his McDonald's shares. So then they call it down to the floor, or they had a runner in a different jacket who would run it into the pit, give it to the trader, who then said, okay, 27.
So I would know which trader is doing what. So I
guess it's madness. You just have to make it. You have to say, we're going to do it. We're going to do exactly. Yeah, it's great. No. These people were buying McDonald's shares. These people were buying, Coca-Cola shares. Yeah, there was a McDonald's section and a Coca-Cola section. But that's all. It's all going away. It's being replaced by what's called a quote-based system. And it's being placed by the computer. The widely scattered telecommunication networks through which transactions are made. So when we come back on Thursday, we will go through and take a look at the New York Stock Exchange. Anybody not see the puppy here, the spreadsheet? We will take a look at the New York Stock Exchange. We hope to see a video of how it used to work and what happens when it don't work. And then, I don't think we'll get to this on Thursday, we're going to do our own exchange. We're going to be buyers and sellers, brokers and dealers. So get excited, folks. Every day, study. Who came in late? Who came in late?